present on pricing carbon. Mr. Hollowgate, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Co-facilitator. So as you can see on this slide, the title is not carbon pricing, not because I want to talk about carbon pricing, because I will, and it's a priority for us, but because I wanted to start by stressing the fact that we really see the climate change issue as a development issue that no one policy can fix. Anything we would do will be based on policy packages, including many different things. And even though carbon pricing is an important component, it's clearly not the only one. So I really wanted to start by really putting this climate challenge within the development challenge. That's really, we think, the way to frame it. I'll start by talking a little bit about mitigation, and then I'll move to the adaptation and resilience issue. So on the mitigation, okay, I'm changing on my computer, but it's not very helpful. Thank you, sorry about that. So I would like to start with what needs to be done, and we're always talking about all the uncertainty we have regarding climate change, and I'd like to talk about what's robust, what we know and what we can use to base action. And one thing that is really, really strong in the last IPCC report is this almost linear relationship between CO2 emissions, cumulative emissions, and the temperature, which means that if you want to reach a 2-degree target, we don't really know exactly where the budget is, but we have a finite budget in terms of CO2 emissions. If you have a different target, if you take 1.5, you have a different budget, and if you go above this, you have a different target, a different budget. But what we know is we have a budget in terms of CO2 emission, which means that we have to go towards zero net CO2 emission globally. And the question is not so much where we want to go, the question is the speed we can go there. What we think is having this long-term goal in mind is already something on which we can base a lot of policy action and a lot of our own actions. We have worked with the IPCC very much. We have been working with our technical experts internally. And what we see is that regardless of the discussion on the target, 1.5 or 2 degrees, the models to reach zero net emissions of CO2 are always doing four things. They are doing a lot of energy efficiency in all sectors. They are doing fuel shift in transport, heating, and industries. They are doing decarbonization of electricity generation. And they are doing land use changes in forestry, agriculture, and urban planning. So even though there are a lot of uncertainties in the carbon and climate system and a lot of uncertainty about technology and so on, I think we have a pretty good idea of what needs to be done. And this is sufficient to start looking at policies and actions. So to do these four pillars of action, if you want, the World Bank Group is supporting countries in different things. The first one is in setting prices right. And this is where the discussion on carbon pricing is really important. At the last UN summit in September, 73 countries and more than 1,000 investors and firms called for carbon pricing as a tool to ensure that we mitigate climate change in an efficient manner. And we really would like to support this move toward carbon pricing as really a way of reaching our goal in an efficient way. And in that, we also stress the complementarity of social protection to make sure what's done in terms of reducing fossil fuel subsidies or carbon pricing is not affecting poverty reduction. And we have a lot of examples of fossil fuel subsidy reforms in the world today that were going with social reforms, with targeted support to the poor, that makes these changes good for poverty reduction and good for the poor, being very progressive in terms of distribution. So this, and this is really important for us, can be done without hurting poverty reduction. As I said, carbon pricing is not everything, and we're also looking very much at energy efficiency. One thing that's really important is the use of performance standards for cars, buildings, and so on. And we're really support the goal of SE for All to double the rate of improvement in energy intensity by energy efficiency, sorry, by 2030. Third pillar is about renewable energy and diversification of the economy. And again, SE for All provides a good benchmark to work on this, and we're very active in this field. And I want to stress land use planning, which is for agriculture, forestry, but also urban planning. And we have initiatives to support cities as they develop, implement, and enforce their urban planning, and in how they can access funding and financing to make these plans get on the ground. And this is especially the case for public transit. For agriculture, we have, for instance, another goal, which is to basically screen all agriculture projects to make sure they are climate smart by 2018. So I want to stress two reports that provide a lot more information on this. The State and Trends of Carbon Pricing, which shows that carbon pricing is gaining momentum. And this map shows you where carbon pricing is implemented or where schemes to price carbon are being designed. So we see a movement, and we have great hopes that this movement will continue. A second report that talks about this issue is the one on climate smart development. And I started by saying that climate issues are about development. This report is really going in that direction by looking at the co-benefits in terms of health, in terms of jobs, in terms of agricultural productivity, energy cost savings, and so on, that all these co-benefits that climate policy can bring. So let me now turn to resilience and adaptation, which is also a topic on which we are very active. The first point we really want to make is the fact that even if the target is 1.5 or 2 degrees, it would not be it would be too risky to make that as an assumption when we plan adaptation. And adaptation planning today cannot assume that this will be reached. One critical example is the fact that we have climate sensitivity uncertainty, which means that even with the budget in terms of CO2 that I talked about, the actual temperature change might be higher. So we have, as we plan adaptation, to also look at more pessimistic scenarios. So we have been commissioning reports looking at what it means to adapt to 2 degrees or what it means to adapt to 4 degrees, and we find that this is really different, which really justifies to also look at the pessimistic scenarios when we plan adaptation. Just a couple of examples from the Turn Down the Heat report. This was a volume 2, looking at the decline in water availability, comparing a plus 2 degree world with a 4 degree world, and we find that the decline in water availability is more than doubled if we go to 4 degrees compared with 2 degrees. Well, so clearly, adaptation needs would be very different. Looking at heat extremes, we also see the type of non-linearity. As the global temperature increase gets higher, the needs to invest to cope with high temperatures would be increasing rapidly. And same thing for coral reef. We have been talking about that yesterday. We have to think about these scenarios as we plan for adaptation. We released just a few weeks ago the third volume of the Turn Down the Heat report, focusing on Latin America and the Caribbean, Middle East and North Africa, and Eastern Europe and Central Asia. And I won't get into the details, but the findings are the same. Needs for a 4 degree world in terms of adaptation are much higher than for a 2 degree world. And as there is this uncertainty on temperature change in the future, we have to think of adaptation needs, taking into account these bad scenarios. I want just to add a few things about why we really care about this adaptation and resilience issue. Our objectives, as you know, is double, is to eradicate extreme poverty by 2030 and to boost shared prosperity, which is the income of the bottom 40%. And we find much more vulnerability to natural disasters, and even that might increase because of climate change. The poor are much more exposed than the non-poor. So we ran recently an analysis on Mumbai, looking at people exposed to floods, and we find that poor people are 10 times more likely to be exposed than non-poor people. So this difference for us shows that poverty reduction is threatened by climate impacts, and that adaptation and resilience is just part of our mandate as we try to reduce extreme poverty and boost shared prosperity. Just one point I want to make, because we're often talking about the impact on the poor, I want to stress the dynamics in poverty reduction. Looking at one example in Andhra Pradesh, where we found that the flows out of poverty are 14% per year, but at the same time, we have 12% of households falling back into poverty every year. So we're always talking about the net flows, but we have to keep in mind that every year people are getting out and in of poverty. And if you increase these fluxes just a little bit downwards for the flow into poverty or for the flow out of poverty, the impact on the net effect can be very, very important. So if you take a dynamic view of poverty and you want to eradicate poverty, even a small increase in the number of people falling into poverty because of disasters can have a very large impact. Just skip this. Last point I want to make is our commitments in the AIDA, so our fund for the lowest income countries, where we committed to really look at development through a resilience lens. And we made commitments in how we develop country-level strategies, looking at climate and disaster risk when we do that. And we also committed to screen all projects to make sure they are not creating or exposed to climate risks. So just to give you an illustration of this, we created tools today to screen projects and country strategies for climate risks. We have tools for many sectors, and we're in the pilot phase of this. But this is a good illustration, I think, of how we really want to not take adaptation, resilience, and mitigation as a separate issue, but to bring that in how everybody is thinking about development. I'll stop here. Thank you very much.